You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right, take three, Curtis. Welcome back.
Well, and then I get caught lounging. Okay, so let's see.
You're distracted by Jason over there, I understand.
Right, I know. I'm checking to make sure that everything's playing out the way that it's supposed to. Hey, welcome back to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Yeah, after a long break.
It has been a long break, and you know, it's all my fault, too. It wasn't Joby's choice and it wasn't anyone else's. It's just me that's, you know.
Hey, summertime vacations. That's
out,
all right.
Out gallivanting across the country, I guess.
That's good. How were your adventures in all I kept seeing you post were, did you just go to breweries or were you on family vacation?
Well, you know, 10 years ago, you had to kind of really plan in order to make sure that you stopped for lunch where there was a brewery and stopped for at the end of the day where there was a brewery. And now it's just wherever you go, you know, that basically there's going to be some sort of local brew. So no, it wasn't planned that way, but somehow it just happened that every single stop involved beer.
Yeah. What were some of your, I mean, anything stick out to you? What were some really cool places you went to?
Well, I think maybe the best surprise was a few years ago when I went back to, and I grew up in South Dakota and I lived there for 30 some years. I can't remember whenever I moved out here, but the beer selection in South Dakota has gotten so good that the last time I was there 2 years ago, there really wasn't anything around. And while I was out there, I loaded up on beers from Kansas, from Nebraska, Minnesota. There's a couple in South Dakota and Iowa, you know, a lot of really good, a lot of good beers floating around. And so I brought out West Coast beers, gave those out to the people that I was staying with, and then loaded up with Midwest beers and brought those all back.
Yeah, it's a hot commodity, right? West Coast, some of the West Coast beers, some of their beers too, but it's just, you know, you can take them and trade. And I know a lot of people do beer trades for, especially Firestone seems to be the brewery, and Firestone seem to be those ones that you can really trade for.
So yeah, so the beer quality across the country is improving just incredibly. And, you know, I brought back beers that I knew that people weren't going to be able to get. Surf, Figaro Mountain, ones that don't distribute outside of California for the most part. And I also brought in some Firestone Walker. Some of them can, you know, I think you can get that in Colorado, but for the most part, people are still jonesing for Firestone Walker. Well, I'm jonesing for Firestone Walker. Yeah. So, I mean, if I am, then most people are too.
So are they hopheads kind of like us or not really?
Depends on who you stay with. I've got my beer friends are generally hopheads. My parents a little more malty on the malty side, and but what's nice is even in Okoboji, Iowa, which is this little tiny, which is kind of the lakes region. So it's the only lake within like 200 miles. So everyone goes there in the summertime and hangs out. They've got a brewery there, and they're brewing saisons and some other things, and they're putting them in cans. So I had a saison in a can, and I had a triple in a can, and so I mean all these Belgian styles that you think that
where's the cork,
right? That you associate with a bottle conditioned beer are they're all available in cans, which is a lot of fun to drink.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, the cans are definitely, I mean, we talked about it on another show, but they're definitely catching on, and portability and be on the lake, on the river, whatever, you got your can with you.
Right.
I've never had a canned saison though. That sounds kind of interesting.
Well, you will at some point, because yeah, right. I brought a couple home. I brought some home so that we could test them out anyway.
That's a nice thing about road trip is you can just load up on your. You don't have to worry about it. It's not like flying. You could just load up all kinds of stuff. Start taking stuff out to put beer and wines in your car.
I think my mic's back on. No, I can't hear anything in my headphones. So, yes, let's, you know what, this is driving me nuts. I got to get this figured out because I can't go back and forth between these mics. So let's take a quick break, 10 minutes. We'll come back. We've got a great show though, here. We've got Plan B Wine Cellars. We've got Marlo and Janice here.
Yeah, we'll get right into it.
The winemakers, owners, you know, it's hot. It's kind of humid in here, and we just had a half a glass of rosé.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to another one, the nice, light, crisp, cold wine to drink, which generally you don't think of when you think of wine as crisp and cold, but this one is the one that, this is what I want right now.
All right, so let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll get right into it.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Now we've got some little bit of feedback coming through. I tell you, there we go. Ooh, yeah. That's smooth now. It was all my fault. It was my headphones. My headphones were off. I couldn't hear what I was saying. And
that's okay. Several people's headphones are off.
I'm such a prima donna that I couldn't go on without hearing my voice come through the headphones. Like, wait, cut. I can't hear myself. We're not going on any further. But we are back. Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. And we are broadcasting live this evening from the My Buzz Radio studios here in beautiful downtown Ventura. And it's a warm one, but thankfully our guests brought in some nice refreshing wine. We have Janice and Marlo Burger. Did I say that right?
A Barger.
Barger. Burger with the A.
It's not the Barger Meister. Yes, we have Barger here. Marlo and Janice Barger from Plan B Wine Cellars, located here in Ventura as well. A fairly new winery. You've been a year?
No.
Not quite. Just opened in October.
All right.
And this is a great story, and it's one of these things where you kind of, there's more and more of these stories, I guess, that are coming around with people who are just kind of, one, either retiring or just giving up their day jobs altogether. And so we'll just kind of, we'll lead in with a softball question and ask you, how did you get started making wine?
Yeah, she throws it right back at me.
It's all your fault.
Well, it all started out as fun. Let's put it that way. We both had day jobs, and Jan was working at a taste room as a change from her day job, which had been very stressful. And I was just hanging out at a winery for fun and accidentally learned how to make wine. It was never really the plan. I think it was more fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple years of that, one morning after a birthday, Jen said, you know, maybe we should think about starting a winery for ourselves since we've been working with other wineries. Because in 10 years, if we don't try something crazy, we'll probably look back with some regret.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounded like wisdom to me. And so we did a quick business plan and then threw it away because that was scary. And just took the plunge. And partly it's plan B because it's an alternative to retirement, since we burned a pretty good sized chunk of the retirement in the startup process. And but you know, the idea was to have a job, in quotes, that was fun, that kept us busy, and involved in the community, and it's certainly doing that so far.
I think so too. We really want to make really good wine, and we want to give really good service at our winery, and so it just kind of all follows through with our plan, and not to be like everybody else.
Are you two from Ventura? Did you move here, locate, or how did you choose Ventura?
Another Plan B moment.
Yes.
We live in Camarillo, and just for the sake of convenience, we were actually looking for property in Camarillo to open. And we were real close to signing a lease there, but...
like a couple hours.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it just wasn't right. It wasn't ideal. It was the wrong shape and size. And for some reason, which I cannot recall at this time, I went on Craigslist and looked under commercial real estate, and I would never have ordinarily thought of doing that, but first listing is 3520 Arundel Circle, unit 107, which is where we are located.
Nice. Yes.
So it took about 2 minutes once we walked in there to know that was our spot.
Yep.
I've been in there, and it's a huge space too, you know, and so I've been to a couple wineries in Camarillo, and they're all fairly small, you know, not much bigger than this room, right. Really.
Yeah. Now, did you do that on purpose for the future, or did it just all fall into place?
It sort of fell into place. And it's just, it couldn't have been better, really. The thing of it is, if you're trying to be like everybody else, then you're just a derivative, and that's really no fun. And while you can't get too far outside the lines, we just really felt like having a tasting room inside the barrel room was more our style, rather than trying to make something, trying to be Napa-ish, you know, or or too elegant. After all, we're in a warehouse.
It's a big metal building.
Industrial area.
In an industrial area of Ventura. So let's, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Let's just make it fun. And I think we've managed to accomplish that.
So are you telling me there are no vineyards like outside of your property?
We have granite.
We have a granite yard, but not a vine yard.
Well, it's, and you know, traditionally when you thought of a winery, you thought, you know, and most people have this vision in their head of pulling up and there's rolling hills of vineyards and it's 100 acres of vineyards outside, but that's not the case anymore, right? You don't have to have all that.
No. And it's a good thing, because what we're doing by having an urban wine scene is we're bringing wine closer to the people. And now you no longer have to travel even 90 minutes from Ventura and Camarillo. You can go 19 minutes. LA is closer, you know, and that's a pretty good sized market if we can get their attention.
Well, one of the things that when you go to the winery too, it's you know, industrial area, and you walk in and it's industrial chic, and there's, you know,
thank you.
Sure. Very nice.
Sure. And you know, the wood, everything falls into place. And right. Especially, I mean, as you drive into the location and you've got the stone cutting service right out in front, and as you drive towards the back, once you get into there, you don't know where you're at, and you forget where you're at.
Yeah.
And then what I really like too is the patio. So you really have to go out and take a look, because they've got their wine crate set up, and it creates a really nice kind of patio space outside as well.
Yeah. I mean, Curtis, you're no stranger to breweries like I am. It's perfectly common to pull up to an industrial area and there's just a little sign on the door, but you walk inside and you're transported to a whole nother thing. You know, Figueroa is like that, definitely.
It's some of, and it's, that's some of the most fun about finding those places too, is that it's that these places are tucked away inside something that you wouldn't necessarily think of. And I think that's what's really nice about the whole Ventura and even some of the Santa Barbara, even though once you get into Santa Barbara County, sometimes they're located in their vineyard, you know, but definitely here in Ventura County, you know, it's, I think more often than not, you're looking at the industrial park.
Right. Yeah. You know, the advantage of having vineyard outside your door is certainly there. I mean, if we had that choice, that would be our go-to plan. But I think if you don't have it, it makes you up your game at other levels. And people who are risking a lot to open a small boutique winery like the ones here in Ventura County are certainly passionate about what they're doing. And I think that's reflected in our product. And certainly, my experience going to other wineries around here, it's reflected in the service. People are pretty cool.
Yeah. So. How involved are you in the, not in the winery, I'm pretty sure you're involved, but, you know, in the vineyards, in the grapes that you buy, and, you know, of course, being in California, you have access to all kinds of amazing grapes. And probably a lot of them right now.
Yeah, we source our grapes up and down the, you know, the Central Coast. Happy Canyon in Santa Barbara, San Ynez, Edna Valley, Paso Robles. In Paso Robles, we actually get to go in the back of the truck and help pick our Petite Syrah grapes, which is really fun.
If you like getting sticky.
It's not as glamorous as you think, is it?
Yeah.
The one thing I think I've learned more than anything else about vineyards and that whole glamorous process is that it's really
that was
hard.
Air quotes if you didn't see that.
It's the people especially that work in the fields day after day when it's hot and it's muggy and it's miserable and they're out there, it makes you appreciate a bottle of wine just that much more.
I agree with you. I mean, I really think that a lot of the wine is made in the vineyard.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I want to be really sensitive, you know, delicate when I say that. I don't want to upset you. Yeah. But it really, I mean, and that's why I was just asking, and that's got to be some of the fun for you guys to go and be involved in that process, taste the grapes, you know.
Right. Yeah, that is a good thing. We don't actually own vineyard property, but we have the luxury then to contract with professional growers, and we have some really good ones. I think. And depending, they have different types of contracts, but some of them we pretty much have the say. We can go in there and drop fruit or whatever, or ask them to if we're willing to pay. But you know, those kinds of experiences are part of my growth as, you know, our growth as winemakers is, you know, making picking decisions, which, you know, in our fun segment of winemaking, we didn't actually have to make any of those choices. It was just, here come the grapes, let's make wine.
And right.
Now it's, oh my God, I got to decide.
Yeah.
So reading through your website, Joby, can you give us the address so that people can take a look?
It's planbwinecellars.com.
And I was through the about section and or about the wines, whatever it was. And you're talking about how your first set of wines were Rhone Valley grapes. Is there a reason why you picked Rhone Valley, or was this part of the fun part where you were just saying, like, here come the grapes and we're going to use these? Well, how did you pick
these? They're both shaking their heads.
No, it wasn't the fun part. Huh?
I think our favorite go-to wines are basically the Rhone. Yeah. You know, the Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre. There's actually 13 or more. I can't name them all. The Grenache Blanc, Roussanne, Marsan, Viognier, all those. Pretty much our favorites. And we thought, well, let's not try to, you know, use the shotgun approach, at least early. Let's try to focus on something smaller and do a good job at it. And then as we go along, we'll start adding, you know, things that we enjoy drinking, first of all. So that's kind of the plan.
Well, it's a good place to start, too.
Of course.
If you can make what you know, if you like it, what you're making, then there's the fun in it, you know. And if you're making stuff that you're not going to drink, where's the fun in that? So what is it about these Rhone Valley grapes so correct me whenever I say something. So if it's not the Rhone Valley, if that's not the correct kind of term for that appellation, whatever it is, let me know. But what is it about those Rhone grapes that you two find, I guess, interesting?
Yeah. Well, let's start with the whole division of the grape world, which is basically Bordeaux and Rhone. And those are the regions of France, that the river valleys, the Rhone River and not Bordeaux River, but whatever
river. The Medoc?
Yeah, could be. That, I'm not real up on that, but those, each of those regions has this history, and they have their own style of bottle even, although that's not mandatory, it's certainly traditional. And the Bordeaux, you know, the Napa cabs and all that sort of thing are wines that require typically longer aging, and we really wanted something that was much more approachable, and Syrah, which is our go-to, is not only an easy drinking wine, but it's also really reflects the place where it's grown. Mm-hmm. A cool climate Syrah is completely different than a warm climate Syrah. And you know, you'll see that if you buy an Australian Shiraz, which is Syrah, but because of their warm climate and their style of winemaking, it's that big, higher alcohol, jammy, really warm. They're luscious,
right?
And a cool climate is a little leaner, possibly lower alcohol, a little more spice, higher acid, better food wine, frankly. But you know, it's all about what you want to do with it.
I think we, you know, picked the Rhone varietals because, well, one, that's what we drink mostly of, and two, we actually have 200 vineyards in our
200
vines. I mean, in our backyard, that we were fooling around with before we actually opened up our winery, and so we learned a lot about that. And one of our favorite is the Stella River clone, and that's one of our Syrahs that we have that we got up in San Ynez. It was the same clone, so. Nice. Just kind of feels familiar, but we've branched out.
Have you made wine from the grapes in your backyard?
Yes.
I mean, at the winery or just at home?
Well, first year was at home, and then when we moved over there, we've done a couple there. So
do we have an appellation? Do we have Ventura County appellation?
No.
We still don't, right? We're trying to get that. So
yeah, the nearest one is Malibu. There is actually vineyards in it, an AVA.
But being Camarillo, you can't.
No.
For those that don't, Appalachian is, it's controlled. It's an actual government thing. It's like the bigger ones, California is probably the master for the state, right? You can use California if it's from anywhere
right
in the state. And then you have Napa and Santa Barbara, San Ynez.
There's actually 8 AVAs in Central Coast.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But Ventura doesn't have it.
No.
And those traveled along also through through the beer world too. I mean, yes. There's Appalachians along as well. So I mean, it's the same kind of thing that you've got to meet a certain standard with the grapes, or whether it's the percentage or the sugar content or the location or whatever it is. That's the kind of things that we're talking about when we're talking about a wine appellation.
Right.
And just to make you beer people feel good, it takes a lot of beer to make good wine. It's hot.
That's
thirsty.
Definitely true.
It's hot, thirsty work.
I've heard that on a number of occasions.
A lot.
So this is my takeaway from tonight is the difference between the Bordeaux and the Rhone regions and where the the Bordeaux's are taking many, many years to reach maturity, whereas the Rhone varietals are coming into themselves earlier.
I would say that's a pretty broad categorization, but yes, I think we happen to barrel age for 2 years, which is longer than some and probably not as long as others. But the wine is very approachable. When we call young, right after we bottle, it's still a young wine. Whereas a really well-made Cabernet might need 10 years of bottle age before it really comes into its own.
Well, I know at home we've got a couple of wines that we're aging, and we wrote the date on it. But I am no good at aging anything.
I mean, I know.
I love.
It's not fun.
No, it's not fun waiting for it. And I love fresh. I love fresh beer, and I love and just being able to drink a wine and being able to approach it too.
I mean, there is definitely a flavor profile in aged old wine. I mean, there's over the hill wine for sure. That's not good. But then there is like a character, and some people don't like that aged quality to the wine. They want that fresh, vibrant kind of style.
Yeah, they actually have a term for the aromas that wine develops in the bottle, and they call it a bouquet, as opposed to say aroma. You know, it's a pretty subtle difference, but there are more restrained but more complex aromas and flavors that come from bottle aging if you have the patience. But
yeah, the hard thing is if you wait too long on accident and you open it and then you're like, wow, I have 9 bottles of this.
That's right, it's done.
So that's the hardest part about aging, and that's why everybody recommends buying a case.
Yeah,
because you're supposed to open one at a certain time out.
Sure.
You open
watch
the second
it,
bottle,
how it evolves.
And then when you get that sweet spot, if you do get it, then you just drink the rest of it.
There you go.
But if you miss it.
Can I use that as a marketing tool?
You can definitely use it. But if you miss the mark, you just have a bunch of vinegar on your hands. So.
That's the Joby marketing plan right
that's
there.
The way I learned it. Buy a case.
Well,
I mean, I've sold wine before. Right?
When are you coming into our wine?
I would love to come in. I will be in there. But you can't just buy one bottle. How are you going to know if it... And what if you have a bad bottle?
Yeah.
So right.
I know. He needs to be standing behind the counter of every winery. Yeah. What are you doing buying one
bottle? One bottle is not going to get you anywhere.
What are you doing Saturday?
I'll be fine. But there are a lot of, with aging wine, there's so many like factors, things that can happen. I've seen it. I mean, I've sold $1,600 bottles of wine, and I've had my fingers crossed, like, please, this guy doesn't call me tonight and say something. And it's like, there's so much that could happen, you know, to this bottle. And hopefully, and that one was okay. That was like a 50-year-old Bordeaux.
Right.
And the guy drank it for Christmas, and
nice.
It was great. I was so happy. But, yeah, it's just like there's so many things that can happen. Fresh, maybe better in this case. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Well, I think maybe let's talk about the fresh just a little bit, because I finished up this.
That was definitely fresh, the rosé.
Yeah, the rosé.
That was
my
great.
Rosé, which, you know, crisp, light, kind of bubbly.
Backyard, back porch wine.
Right. So
let's try it
yeah,
again.
It's called Porch Pounder.
Porch Pounder. There you go. That's much better than backyard.
So Janice, what's the whole idea behind this? Walk us through what we're doing here with this.
You mean when you're drinking it?
No,
he's swirling it, so far so good.
So one of the things I love about it is just that it's the opposite of what I think about when I think about like a snooty kind of wine thing.
Right.
And you know, this is so nice to be drinking, to enjoy right now.
Well, when you buy a growler from us, You.
I was going to mention that. First of all, that was in a growler, so that's unsnooty right there.
Yes,
that's right.
1 liter growler, and you get the instructions of chill it, kill it, refill it. So you come back.
I see. That's great marketing right there. You don't need
any help.
To
refill it for $15.
Oh, that's awesome. $15 for a liter of fresh rosé. So.
Yes, nice and dry, crisp.
What, you know, what kind of grapes do you guys use? Or is it one grape?
It's Grenache.
Grenache, okay.
100% Grenache. And that was a plan B moment, too.
A lot of life is, I think.
You ended up with something you weren't quite sure what to do with?
Well, I ended up with a lot of something, and I knew what to do. But
the Grenache.
Grenache, Grenache is one of those grapes that we happen to contract by the acre rather than by the ton. Hmm. And 2010 and 2011, the yields were fairly restrained because of the weather. They were both cold and wet years. 2012 was darn near perfect. And so I'm sitting there looking at, instead of 2 or 2.5 tons, I had close to 4 tons. And I just thought, rosé time. And if it goes badly, nobody needs to know.
Yeah.
I think it turned out really nicely. It's got good color. It's bone dry. It's no residual. It's no white Zin by any means.
So is this 2012?
Yes.
2012 Grenache.
And I mean, we're in July now, so you're really just, it's all stainless steel, or?
Yeah. I ran one barrel in through oak and put it through malolactic fermentation just to see what would happen. And I frankly can't tell much difference in the flavor.
Really?
I think the total acidity is a little lower because it consumes some of the malic acid. Now we're going all techno, but
that's okay. That's fine.
But it still drinks really well, so we're happy with it.
So is all rosé a Grenache?
No.
Okay, so
Pinot Noir. It can be
any red or dark skinned grape, right?
Yeah.
I've seen rosé of Cabernet.
Uh-huh.
I know there's at least one winery up in San Ynez area that makes a rosé from Mourvedre, which we're going to have a red Mourvedre here. And I'm anxious, maybe this year, I might give that a whirl.
Well, actually, you bleeded off about 100 gallons.
Yeah, maybe 120 gallons or so. Just and after 24 hours on the skins, we just pulled the juice out and fermented it separately.
So what makes a wine a rosé?
Least contact next to the skins.
Yeah, less time on the skins, and then you ferment it. Like a white wine,
cold.
Away from the actual skins of the grapes.
So you don't get the color and the tannin.
Right.
And the,
right.
So for you, 24 hours, that's what it is for you?
It was with these grapes,
Okay.
Yeah.
And you just, you take a sample, and if it when it comes out the right color, you just go, that's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, there may be some science there that I'm not familiar with.
I think that was perfect.
Yeah.
But that is kind of, I mean, I'm no schooled winemaker. I'm running on instinct and what I read and some of what I got taught.
Right.
But we didn't make any rosé before. And this one, I assumed that we would lose some color during fermentation and even the short aging time. So we decided to err a little on the side of dark because I'd rather have it dark than sometimes if you don't get enough color in it, it tends to get a little orangish.
All right.
As it. And that's not an appealing color to me. So.
Yeah.
Orange wine.
What?
White or red.
White or red, yeah. So you mentioned earlier you wanted to make it clear this is no white Zin, and you said that on purpose. And I think that there's a valid point that we need to talk about. What is it about white Zin that just ruined it? Because white Zin is not really a rosé, right?
It is actually
a
rosé.
Sweet.
It's just had a ton of residual sugar.
On purpose.
On purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great entry-level wine for somebody who's not real comfortable with the flavors of a dry or doesn't appreciate the tannins or whatever. And it's probably even good if you're eating it with just smoking hot Thai food or something because that sugar helps cut that burn. Mm-hmm. But
I can think of a lot of other wines I'd pick first. But it was that wine that people just drank all the time before. And it was, but once you taste the rosé, and you can make a sweet rosé, right, if you wanted to.
Yes, I think the biggest resistance we have, you can stop it or you can actually blend unfermented juice back in and stabilize it. But I think the biggest resistance we have to people, we're kind of forcing them to taste the rosé in the tasting room as part of our lineup.
They just don't want it.
And they're like, nah.
They think it's sweet, right?
Yeah.
And I say, don't worry, it's not sweet, I promise. I'm like, okay. And then they're like, oh, I like that.
So, I'm a leader.
So we're there you go. That's,
I mean, we're opening eyes.
And this is a great barbecue wine, I should mention that. This is like for summertime barbecue. I love to have it, especially this one, the dryness of it, that Grenache is coming through. Great.
Well, I was just going to say about the rosé, too. And I love big red wines, too. I mean, I can't pick them apart like a can of beer kind of thing. But my wife, you know, my wife loves it, loves wine, and so and doesn't necessarily like beer. So we do a lot of back and forth. When it's wine tasting day, then I'm the DD. And when it's beer tasting day, she's the DD. But we were in Paso Robles, and we were at Cypher Wineries. And I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they had a rosé there. And she ended up not tasting it, and then we ended up reading about it somewhere along the line, and it was getting these high marks on, on you know, this is a must drink. And it was, and I think even from my really beginner level kind of snootiness, I want to try a big bold red, and I don't want to kind of come. And then we had this at your place, and it changes your perception on what a rosé really can be, and how fun and just thirst quenching too that it can be.
There's an axiom in the wine business that people talk dry and buy sweet, and we see a little bit of that. But I had a similar experience where there was a time when I would decline almost any white wine at a tasting, and especially Chardonnay. I had just I don't know what it was. I think it was when the pendulum had swung to the butterscotch, you know, candy. But I actually decided one time at one tasting room that I might be cheating myself because there's other styles out there, and so I went back to trying everything, and every now and then you'll hit some butterscotchy Chardonnay. You know, that's okay. It's got its place, but by and large, you're really shortchanging yourself if you don't try everything, because no winemaker worth his salt is going to put something in the tasting room that's really, really not drinkable. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just about ready to kill this to kill my.
I don't think we're going to refill though.
No. Let's go on to the next one. But I may take that one at the end of the night. We'll see what happens.
It's worth noting that the alcohol is 15%.
We're calling it 14.9.
This
one?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But I don't think you can tell that.
No, you can't tell.
By drinking it, it's very nicely.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I heard it earlier. Yeah, it's kind of
hinted
at it.
Thank you, Joby, for pointing that out, because as I'm just sucking this one down, going, oh, yeah, this is all right.
It's all part of the plan, folks.
It is. No. I don't need. Whoops, here.
Don't worry, we'll buy a case.
Let me go this way. Yeah, I don't need any help being chatty. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I will get there definitely. Okay, so what do we have here?
Okay, this is our 2010 Mourvèdre.
100%.
It's red wine from the Mourvèdre grape. Well, a lot of people haven't even heard of Mourvèdre, and most of us don't know how to say it right, but.
What was your pronunciation of it? We've had
Mourvèdre.
I've heard you pronounce Mourvèdre at one point.
There was I guess there's a Plan B way of Mourvèdre, but I've heard that in a French way, but Mourvèdre. Did I say something else?
Well, no, I was thinking that there was some really bad mispronunciation.
Oh, there are. Well, the really bad one of my experience was Viognier, because
the Viognier.
Like, yeah, that one, like, that's a hard one to pronounce if you don't know what it is. And it's like Viognier, and there's just been all kinds of, but even with Vedra. Now, traditionally, this is a blending wine.
Yes.
You're going to see a lot in GSM. Yeah, Chateau Neuf du Pape, one of my favorites.
Yes.
What was the idea in making 100%? What was your, not that it's bad, I'm not saying anything bad. It's just,
We were blending one night, and the other people that were helping us, they just went, I liked it plain. So it's like, why are we messing around with this? So we decided to keep it 100%.
Yeah, it was one of those wines that was so late evolving that at about 16 months, we did have discussions about, well, how much of this can we blend in to, you know, whatever.
Whoops.
I don't know who that was.
I don't either.
Everybody's okay. But somewhere between the 16 and 22 month, every time we would go through the barrels, which we do at least once a month, and taste everything, it started getting our attention, and we'd be having guests, you know, family members from out of town, whatever, come through and do barrel samples, and almost invariably it was like, can I try that Morved thing? And yes, you can try it again, and it is definitely not a California style wine. It's not a big fruit bomb. It's lower in alcohol, which I can't say on the label, but it's only about 12.6. We've had some people who are definitely fond of the European wines come into the taste room and just rave about it. Other people that like it a lot are white wine drinkers who claim they don't like red because it's an easy drinking, very approachable.
Now, is Mavedra light-skinned?
It is a
lighter-skinned red. Is that the right way to say it?
I think it's not typically. In Paso, it is grows much darker. This particular vineyard, which is up in Happy Canyon, three vintages in a row, we've got Mavedra from the same vineyard, same block, and we are surprised each year at how not dark.
Yeah, it is not dark. Exactly. I guess the technical term is not dark. It's not dark.
No, it's a light wine. It's a little smoky.
Yeah, kind smoky, of meaty. Graphite, kind of like just those like meaty. It doesn't have those bright fruits that you think of like if you're thinking of like a Syrah from Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I think that's why European wine drinkers liked it because it isn't, you know, just about fruit. There's subtlety and earth and all those fun things. And it's a nice contrast to a fruity wine. You know, we all kind of, since we live here in California, kind of favor that style. But
So this is kind of leading into something, a trend that I've seen, that I'm hearing, is that when I think of Europe, other than with recently with their heat waves, I don't think of Europe as being a hot place. And so is it the heat that brings out the jamminess or the big fruits that you keep? Because you're kind of saying, you kind of keep going back and forth where California wines are big fruity kind of things, and then fruit bombs, and then going back to Europe and Europeans liking this one, and it's not as fruity. And so drawing kind of a circular conclusion to me with the Rhone styles and everything else, does that play a role into the fruitiness of a wine?
The heat does.
I mean, we have a definite Mediterranean climate, and the best grapes are grown in the coolest areas or warmest areas of the coldest climates, I guess. You know, the best Bordeaux are always grown in years where they have a little more heat. At the same time, there's a big argument about the length of the day, and at that latitude, which is similar to Oregon and Washington, you get a 16-hour day of sunlight during the summer growing season, and they can make a pretty good case for just hours of daylight. The key to heat is that it makes the grape accumulate sugar rapidly without necessarily maturing all the phenolics that give it, you know, complexity and depth, shall we say.
Yeah.
And just sweet just turns to alcohol.
Yeah.
So when I first started loving red wines, it was a trip to Tuscany. And so, I mean,
nice.
I mean, because up until that point, I was almost solely just a beer person, but I love, and those are huge red wines. And so the California wines, like the Zinfandels and all those kinds of things, I love those. And I can kind of draw a parallel between the two, taste-wise, maybe. I'm not sure, but you know, summertime in Italy is certainly a different place than summertime in France, heat-wise.
Yeah. I mean, Tuscany's got kind of an identity problem, too, though, because you have super Tuscans, which are just like emulating Cal and trying to get the 100-point scores. And so you're putting Cab and all these things into with Sangiovese and making these big fruit bomb wines. And then you have the more traditional, subtle wines. Does oak play a big factor too, though? New versus...
Yeah, it does. It certainly can play an overwhelming factor. my mentor, Mike Brown, said, you know, his if there was ever a go-to criticism of a wine, it was usually that it had too much oak. And so I was taught restraint very early. And, you know, nobody wants to pick up a glass of red wine and go, wow, that tastes like oak tea. You know? It really should
There's
be about
some
the
sawdust
fruit.
In this.
Lots of vanilla and sawdust. Yeah.
Yeah, and there, you know, and if you learn about the where the flavors are coming from, some of the, you know, some of them are definitely fruit derived, and some are oak derived, and you really want the oak to support the fruit rather than, you know, just be oak.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's us. That's our opinion.
No, and. You know, fruit, what about adding sugar? I mean, I know that's chaplization
no,
is
that's right.
It's illegal in Europe.
It's illegal here
in California.
Right, yeah. But I'm sure it does happen. And
not
at your place. I'm saying at some places.
We have the exact opposite problem in California. If anything, we deal with,
too much sugar. Yeah.
Many odd days.
So that's what makes the big fruit bomb wine is lots of sugar. It'd be like having lots of, you know, making a malty beer a super high gravity to
it's
start with.
It's called Bricks.
Yeah, Bricks. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is actually, you can directly translate gravity and Bricks, I think, in OG, and there's a conversion for it. But that's the big difference. That's not a big fruit bomb at all.
No.
This is really nice and subtle and nice lingering finish.
So this is the
Morvedra.
This is the Morvedra right here.
Yes.
In Happy Canyon.
Yeah.
Oh, Santa Barbara.
Happy Canyon Vogelzang Vineyards.
Vogelzang.
Yes.
Well, we're all kind of finishing up this last one. So while we're because I don't want to rush through that, I'm enjoying this one. What's the next one that you have
next
right
one.
Here?
Next one is that real subtle label that you can't read unless you have a bright light. This one is our Valley View Syrah from San Ynez, and we're almost sold out of this one, so we broke it out of the library to bring it over.
He's kidding.
Well, thank you. He's a good salesman.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it's almost gone.
It's almost gone.
You better get some.
It is.
It is, actually. But this one is kind of our go-to vineyard now. In 2010, we got three different vineyard lots of Syrah, and this one we managed to not corrupt. The other two I blended together one night accidentally, so our Shiraz is a blend of two vineyards of Syrah, which is a really nice, kind of a cooler climate, leaner, a little more acid, great
barbecue.
Spice. Yeah,
like
great
barbecue
wine. This one, which we happen to call, we just call it the Syrah rather than Shiraz. We co-ferment it with a little V&A, and we make a real distinction that we co-ferment as opposed to blend. I think it integrates into the wine much better that way. And it makes a more complex nose. It changes the mouthfeel of the wine significantly. And
well, and if you come around harvest time to the winery, you'll see all the fermenting bins all on the floor, and you'll see these little green grapes, white grapes in there.
And with all the red ones.
Yeah, people go, oh, do you want to help you pick those out? No.
We pay extra for that.
Yeah.
So when you talk about a co-fermentation as opposed to blending, so you're putting the grapes together.
Yes.
Yes.
Fermenting together. And a blend would be fermenting the red grapes and the green grapes and then coming, or?
No, the blend would be the grapes are fermented separately.
Separately.
And then the juice comes together.
Right. You would blend finished wines, as in this case, we're actually just taking
co-fermenting.
Yeah, and that's a traditional. I know the old Italian immigrants that actually started producing wines up in the Napa Valley back in the day. That was tradition. You just planted and you picked, and it was a field blend, and it often included Zinfandel and Petit Syrah and Primitivo and some of these other ones that I can't even begin to conjure up right now. But so there's definitely a difference happens when you co-ferment. I think it's favorable.
I guess I've never heard of that before. You know, I've heard of blending and other things, and it makes sense to me too. I mean, just coming from a brewer standpoint of fermenting everything together is certainly a different. You know, if the wort all comes together and it all has time to blend and meld together, there's a certainly a different taste than adding
blending together different beers that have been fermented separately. Right. So one of the things that I find interesting about winemakers too is that, so when you do these blends, you know, you may go down to a 5% blend. So there's 5% of a different grape in a blend, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I always find that fascinating. And I think because my palate isn't grape sensitive, but it certainly is on a beer side. If mm-hmm. you're putting different grains in, I can tell if there's a 5% difference in a specialty grain, because it makes a big difference in the beer. I'm just not that in tune to what the wines are.
Yeah. Well, and different grain, I mean, sometimes when they're blending, they're even blending the same wine, just different barrels of the same wine, right. and going 5%. And I've seen guys as low as 2%. I'm, as well as you, I'm fascinated by it too. When mm-hmm. when winemakers are talking about, yeah, we had a blending session and our final product was 2%, you know, 3% of this, 70%. It's like, wow, that's amazing that you can sit there and tell. But I guess if it's the same, if it's different grapes, it kind of makes more sense.
Right.
If it's the same wine and you're just getting those subtle nuances, I think that's incredible.
Yeah, it's not uncommon to even blend vineyard lots, because different vineyards might have, you know, much more tannin than others because of the soil types or whatever. So you do that. Yeah, I remember when we first started getting into wine, we'd read labels and we're kind of like, oh yeah, 2% this or that. It's like, who can even tell? It was probably just leftovers, you know?
Right.
Yeah, no.
My apologies to all those winemakers we insulted. It's very true. It matters.
Well, the difference between these two wines that we've just had, the Mourvèdre, which was this really, you know, what I would call a really approachable kind of wine. And then this one, where there's it's a heavier mm-hmm. body. There's some more tannins in there. Mm-hmm. It's a little, and I don't know if I don't want you to take offense of this, but a little jammier than the other one. Yeah, and yeah. so this is the kind that I dig. You know, I mean, this is the one that I really really appreciate.
Yeah.
I loved that one, and that one was a really nice one. This one would be, if I was going to pick between which case I was going home with tonight, mm-hmm. it'd be this one right here.
All right.
Thanks, Joby.
Yeah, no problem.
You just bought me a case of wine.
I said you should buy a case.
Oh, you weren't buying it. Okay.
We make quite a distinction in the type and style of wine. There's food wine, and then there's what I call cocktail wine. And the Mourvèdre is definitely a food wine. It likes like a bolognese or, you know, anything kind of meaty and smoky. Like, it just works really well with that. If I pour myself a glass of the Valley View, just push the food back and sit back and relax, enjoy that glass of wine.
Yeah.
It may work with food, but who cares?
Yeah. I like that.
I agree.
Can't argue with that.
This one would be one that I would sit back and maybe try and kill.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm never one to leave a bottle of wine for the
next This is day. Not 12.5%.
No.
No, it's 15.
All right.
Well, I would have to share, I guess.
A little bit.
You don't have to. I mean,
I guess so.
We'll take a little break, and then we'll come back and finish up, and we'll keep chatting. It's been great so far.
All right. So you've been listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Happy Hour again.
Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor, and I co-host a radio show called Happy Hour, and I wanted to tell you about a great designated driver service called We're Driving. As you might have imagined, I really enjoy having a good time, but before I do, I always make sure I have a designated driver, and that's why I use We're Driving after every show. We're Driving is so easy to use. You go out, you have fun, and We're Driving gets you and your car home safe and sound. It really is that easy. This is how it works. We're Driving sends out a pair of drivers to meet you at your car when you're ready to go home. One of those drivers then drives you and your car home. Visit weredriving.com. That's weredriving.com. Or call 805-421-9706 for rates and to schedule your pickup time. And do me a favor. When you make your reservation, tell them you heard about We're Driving on Happy Hour. Oh, and don't forget to tip your drivers. Cheers.
All right. Welcome back. We're still messing with equipment.
I know. Jason decided, I walked around him, and then he was trying to untangle, but then when I walked back, then everything got tangled back. Welcome back to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
we've just in the break we were talking about all kinds of things.
Turkey and rosé.
Yeah, Thanksgiving and rosé. I really didn't realize that rosé was, and kind of like what you were saying, people don't think about rosé with the turkey, but it's a big selling point.
It's a lot of fun too. It's festive. It's pink.
It is festive.
Or rosé. Sorry, it's rosé.
Yeah. It is not pink.
It's rosé.
It's rosé.
Right.
Salmon.
Well, kind of lighter with the cranberry sauce and all that kind of thing. I could see how that would work. Are you going to have any left over by Thanksgiving?
I don't think so, because I'm going to go there and
get
it.
It's a growler.
Selling fast.
Not with this weather anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, going back to it, you said it's a refillable growler?
Yes.
And is that the only wine you do on tap right now? Or?
No.
No? All right.
We have Jan's Lick.
Elixir of joy.
I'm intrigued.
Of joy. Yeah. Tell us about that.
No,
please.
Prescription needed.
A little plan B, tongue in cheek.
You notice how she stumbled on that a little bit.
Yeah, she was like, should I say it?
No. I wasn't sure if it was the wine or if she was just being a little hesitant on her words.
I think it's one of those like secret menu items that you go in and like if you know about it, you get it. Yeah. But now people know about it.
It's definitely the wine. You can see she's kind of blushing right now. So it's the wine coming out.
She's looking a little rosé, if I do say so myself.
That voice you hear, by the way, is Jason. The Hungry Man has joined us.
Yeah, I want to thank you guys for letting me sit in again. I was sitting in the corner.
He was breaking glasses in the corner.
That was not me. There was a hooligan that walked by. They dropped their beer bottle.
Oh, no.
It happened sometimes.
No, it actually may have been me. But thank you for bringing me on. As far as the Mavedra, I jumped in at that time. That was a really nice wine. You're right on, Janice, with the meatiness and kind of the mineral nose. Mm-hmm. On the palate, I thought there was a little bit of pomegranate. And you know, we were talking during the break about rosé and turkey and cranberry sauce. I would even venture to experiment with a Mavedra on a lighter spectrum in terms of cuisine, because I think there was enough fruit in there, but also a little bit of cedar and enough tartness that it could go with some of those lighter fruits and a little bit of a white perceived spectrum of food.
You know, that's one of the fun things about wine is that there's always, you know, each vintage is a little different, and what may have worked last year doesn't necessarily work this year. You like it, I don't like it. We're both right. That suits my personality really well.
Right.
You know. So
I think that is true. And then price could be really expensive. It could be really cheap. But if you don't like it, you don't like it.
Right.
Right.
And I mean, before we get going too far, I want to make sure that we give out the website again. So this is planbwinesellers.com.
Yes.
Okay. So
it's a great website. Lots of information.
Go check it out. One of the things I was interested in about, because we talked about how you're doing Rhone varietals for the first, you know, 40, 50 minutes here. You hinted at maybe branching out just a little bit. Are you?
Oh, yeah.
What does the future hold for Plan B?
We have a surprise for you guys.
Oh, a surprise.
You're looking at me. Well, before we talk
about
gotta
come to the barrel room though.
Before we talk about what's coming, you mentioned the website and the lots of information, and I would like to take the opportunity to thank Chris Long, who's our web god. He not only salvaged a disaster, but has turned it around into a website that we constantly get compliments on.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And he's one of those guys that doesn't really talk much, but he gets it. And he's nailed it every time for us, and we wouldn't have such a nice site.
Most of those tech guys are like that, the website guys are.
He's good.
Definitely, and you can tell when you go to a place where they've got a webmaster, web guru, and then you go to another one and you go, I can't believe this thing is so hard to navigate. You know, no, this doesn't make sense to anyone except for you.
Yeah.
But you know, when you've got somebody who can lay this out and make it as easy to navigate
or that event happened 3 months ago.
Yeah, right. It's still on the website.
More updates, definitely.
I'm gonna put the spotlight on you guys a little bit here with this one sentence that keep reading. We don't have a traditional wine club or free tastings or pickup parties.
What do you have, right? We have the B list.
Oh, yeah, you do have some kind of club then.
It's a loyalty plan.
I like that. Yeah. But I think that's great that you say this. I'm not making fun of you. I think it is great. You're saying, hey, we have good wine. We're selling our wine. We want you to taste the wine. It's not about just having a free party and drink all the free wine you want.
Well, and it's not about necessarily, you know, you like it, so we get you to sign up at a weak moment, and now you get to buy a case of wine, even though it may not be convenient. Now, we want you to do that, but we want you to do it on your terms, and that's where our B-list comes in. It's a loyalty plan where you get progressively increasing discounts as you purchase more and more wine, but you don't have to purchase any at any given time. It's like if you want to come in every couple of months, every couple of weeks, every couple of days. That's even better, a couple of days.
Every couple of days would be great. Yeah, you should be there every couple of days. If you live in Ventura, you should be there every couple of days.
That's right.
And that's a really interesting concept in terms of winemakers and wineries, because the traditional model is join a club, yep, even if it's from a distant winery. Yes, I know, yes. Curtis, you were talking about your trip earlier and how you've been out in South Dakota and there's a lot of breweries. You may want beer from there. And I've been up into Monterey area. I like some of the wineries up there, so I'm part of their clubs. They send me the wine. But the traditional model is, I liked it, I signed up, and you're going to send me bottles so I have access to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas, even if you don't want them.
Even though, if you don't want it. And that's, you know, that's leading right into one of the thoughts I had is, I do have a couple of wine clubs that I really enjoy, but there's a risk in them sending me something that either A, I'm not going to like, or that I wasn't accounting for. I know there's one experience from a winery I really love. The bill showed up one day on my account, $25 higher than what my consistent purchases were in the past. Right. And I'm like, what are they sending me? You know, this better be a damn good wine or another bottle.
Yeah, exactly.
Thankfully, what showed up was a reserve bottle, but I actually hadn't been involved with the reserve plan. I was on a lower plan, so they kind of caught me off guard. And for that brief moment, I was like, damn you guys, why? You know, I'm enjoying the fact that you sent me a reserve, but you could have given me a forewarning, you know, and I think that's a risky run.
Yeah, that is a traditional
right,
wine club.
Right now, 85% of wineries in the U.S. have a wine club.
Wow.
So we are exclusive in that we are one of the 15 percenters. And when we say experience the alternative, we mean it, you know. We don't have all those whistles and bells. But you did... We kind of got sidetracked, and I'll pull you back here.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
To what's coming up. In 2011, we added Petite Syrah, Zinfandel, and Cabernet to our lineup.
And from Paso.
Those will be bottled in September of this year, TTB willing.
September 21st.
Yeah. And we had originally gotten the Cabernet because I'm a big fan of the Aussie styles of Cab Syrah blends. And we had this great idea of how to market it and all. But as the wine has evolved, it just gets better and better. And it's not getting blended anymore. It's going to be a straight up Cab. So it's really wonderful.
Awesome.
Just one of those 90-second finishes that just keeps going. It's awesome.
Nice.
And so we're not sorry. And the Zinfandel.
Oh. Zinfandel's ready right now.
Oh, my God.
Right now. People sampled from the barrel. They want it. Put it in my growler.
Yeah.
We can't. We can't do that right now. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like to pat our own backs, but that Zinfandel rocks.
Nice. Well, whenever I drink something and I go, right. I know what you're talking about there. So I'm looking forward to tasting that Zinfandel right now.
Yeah.
And so those will be that. I miss that. That's going to be a September release.
Yeah, we're going to bottle the 21st of September. It'll probably need a few months of bottle time before it'll settle down.
Yeah.
And I think the Petite Syrah especially is youngish. It's going to want some time, but we'll get the Zinfandel out as soon as it's drinking well.
You were mentioning, obviously, you're doing some barrel tastings when you have people in the cellar. How many times are you turning those barrels over and using them for different vintages before you decide that barrel is all done and I got to kick it out of the cellar?
At this point, we're not really kicking many out, partly because unless a barrel is damaged or develops a off bacteria or something, there's really nothing wrong with it. You get oak components out of a barrel for about 3 vintages, or say 3 years, and after that it's just considered neutral. And I would say close to 70 to 75% of our wine is in neutral oak. So, and because we've been gradually growing, we haven't really cycled any barrels out.
Yeah.
That may happen this year, simply because we're plateauing for a little bit here until we kind of get our feet under us. and we may lose some of our older barrels.
But. Yeah, I don't think people understand how much new barrels cost because you see them on sale for $30 when they've been used already. Oh. But they are what, 900 to 1,000? Yes. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah, half barrel at half barrel Home at Depot. Lowe's,
yeah, Home Depot, $30. And you're like, wow, that's not bad. $60 for a barrel.
Right.
But yeah, they're about almost $1,000 right, for a new.
Right. New French oak is.
And that might answer your question also yeah. of why not kicking
I can it. I can definitely appreciate that. But as three beer drinkers around the table as well, I think we can all attest to the fact that brewers understand the value of that used barrel and are looking to acquire those, especially nowadays. There's a big yeah. experimental phase going on with barrel-aged beers, right. looking to impart some of those wine notes and the, like you said, the bouquet right. or a little bit of flavor too. So
yeah, or even the off-flavored barrels, the ones yeah. that are bad.
The ones that have Brett.
Yeah, you mentioned
the ones that have Brett. Yes. Brett is the enemy of a winery.
Yes, oh. it Brett is.
It is like, the joy of a beer.
Yeah, right? bring it on.
Bring
yeah.
it on.
So I think there's some collaboration in the works. You know, yeah. Joe, oh, yeah. I'm looking at you. You've got the beer connections.
Yeah. Have you worked with any local breweries yet? Have anybody?
Well, we've talked Surf with Brewery?
Surf, yeah.
No. Yeah, we talked to Bill at Surf.
You mean Surf? No. So we won't see any barrel-aged Surf, right?
Yeah. Well, you might. I know they had some barrels in there, and he said, you know, yeah, we're making a, what is it, a sour beer
yeah,
with
sour.
The Brett barrels. And mm-hmm. I said, you know, I did the old cross with my fingers, and, you know, I don't even want to talk about Brett.
Right.
Much less ever see it in my winery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for people that know, in wine, I mean, definitely in beer too, but in wine, it's that barnyard.
Yes.
Sounds really weird, but like horse blanket, like just right. like these weird, like, yeah. you know, barn. If you've ever been in a barnyard, then
cat
you know.
Piss.
Cat piss. that is extreme.
There is.
That's like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah.
Right. Those are all there. And
yeah.
what's interesting on the beer side is when those come together in just a wonderful, sort of calming, you know, when you inhale that,
I love it.
When you inhale that, then all of a sudden you're in a barnyard.
You're in
and you know, I grew up in South Dakota, so I have plenty of those pleasant memories yeah. of what a barnyard smells yeah. like. And so, definitely a Belgian style beer with bread or barnyard is there. I don't necessarily want to. Any cat piss in my beer or wine.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So I know definitely
certain hops smell like cat piss. Though.
Well, there is. Yes, there's those and thankfully for some reason I don't have that that sensory with it. So I don't identify it.
Yeah. For a while there were like a lot of French wines that had Brett that they didn't even really say anything about
well,
it.
They just sold it as terroir.
Yeah, they sold it as terroir and you open a $100 bottle of Bordeaux and it smells like freaking barnyard. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a French Bordeaux. It's supposed to smell like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think we really knew, but I think people now we kind of know yes. we know what Brett is and what's yeah. going
it's
on.
It's all in the marketing.
Yeah, right.
And I have bought into the Belgian marketing.
What? The bread's good for you.
That smells like a barnyard? Yeah, I want that. Sure.
Soured beer, perfect.
That is yeah. what I want to drink yes. right now. Definitely.
You know, all these mistakes that were, you know, they started as mistakes and now we seek them out and love them.
Yeah, and it kind of leading into the terroir and marketing. And I'm wondering, are you two ever going to market maybe a pre or a post race wine? So just
a little
backstory with these two is they're both huge runners and between they don't run half marathons anymore because who wants to go out and run for 2 hours? Now let's go do like a 8, 10, 12, yeah. 15 hour race. Let's go run for 15 hours. So like for beer drinkers, you know, I can think of plenty of carb heavy beers that I could drink along the way as well
right.
to fuel a 100-mile race. Do you have?
Is there a preferred wine of the race?
Do you have?
Is that what you're saying?
Right. Do you have a suggestion for say an ultra marathon runner who doesn't like beer but would prefer to have a pre wine drink?
No pre wine drink.
I don't know any ultra marathon runners who don't like beer.
It's a preferred beverage post marathon yeah. for sure.
Right.
The To be honest with you, the pre-race thing for ultramarathoning is typically 6 months or longer, you know, depending on. So
that's a lot of wine.
Wow. Well, you pretty much don't. I at least personally didn't drink hardly any during that period of time because you're stressing your body in other ways. But the post-race beverage, if you're into the protein as a repair tool, you know, for all the damage you do and you're eating, choose to eat meat, then obviously a bigger red is something I would go for. But beer's thirst quenching, and it has a nice mix of carbohydrates and protein, which is good for the you know, uptake. However,
the Bordeaux Marathon
that's on our list of, you know, our bucket list of running the Bordeaux Marathon, and there apparently you run aid station as in chateau to chateau.
How short is that?
It's 26
miles. 26.2. Okay. But apparently the prevailing wisdom
is... Well, if it's in Bordeaux and you're drinking wine, can't be that long.
Well, the locals
say... It's in clicks. Yeah. What does that mean anyway?
It's only 40 clicks.
It's 26 kilometers.
But they say to just drink the... Don't drink the white. Just drink
the red at the aid stations.
So this is a race, the aid stations, instead of Gatorade, it's wine.
It's wine.
Yeah. Oh,
well, you're running chateau to chateau. I mean, that's... Yeah.
It sounds almost like, remember in football years ago, like the Dizzy Lizzies. You're like, how far down the road can you get before you're leaning sideways all over? Yeah. But for me, I saw two things going on. One, it just begs for some kind of sparkling, because we're going to need a post-race celebration.
There when you
cross the line. Right. Yeah. So we're going to lead that direction. But we were also talking earlier. I know you mentioned about it takes a lot of beer to make wine. Yeah. I have to imagine it takes a lot of wine as well to stay comfortable and enjoy just your own home. How many bottles or what style of Plan B wine do you have in your own cupboard?
I take the fifth.
Well,
you don't need it in your cupboard. You've got it down.
You've got it in storage. You know what? We don't want to get a house palate, so we try to drink all kinds of wine.
Yeah, we belong to several wine clubs.
Nice.
We drink most of the Plan B wine at the winery. Mm-hmm. And like Jan said, the biggest concern we had of drinking our own wine is that you get used to how it tastes so subtly that you don't notice if something's going wrong. And that is called a house palate. And you can be convinced that it's delicious, and it's not necessarily.
Interesting.
So we really make an effort to keep, I mean, for crying out loud, there's too much good wine out there. We're not so egocentric that we think we're the only people that make good wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do make really good wine, but it's not the only good wine. You just have to go somewhere else to get it.
Right.
We do have family members on Sunday that call up and say, hey, you got any extra wine left over you're going to bring home?
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have a lot of people that hit you up for wine.
Kind of like winning the lottery.
Right. Yeah. Well, wine lottery.
Sundays are kind of fun, because if you get in there at the right time, we pour a lot at maybe the last hour, just because we don't want to take it home.
Speaking of that, what times are you guys there? What times are Plan B open?
Friday 3 to 7, we have wine flights, and Saturday and Sunday is 11 to 5. Okay. But if you come in at 3 minutes to 5, we'll stay there the whole time with you as long as it takes.
You don't want to say that to these guys.
I know. It's true, though.
You're looking at us, too.
I was thinking of the three of us going there. But.
Well, I don't know if you've ever wine tasted and you go in there at 4:45 and they go, yeah, you only have 15 minutes. Yeah, yeah. We don't ever want to do that to
anybody. That's the English version of pub time, isn't it?
Where if you get in before, 15 minutes, right,
if you get, well, no, but if you get in before they close, then they're pouring beer until you're done and you kick you.
I like that.
They can be surly about it, right?
Yeah, right.
So. Sure.
But the only thing that happens when you tell people that is that they're just going to pound a bunch of wine and leave, and they're not really going to have a good experience. So
right.
I agree with your concept.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's some notes going on over here.
I know.
So, right. So we'll show up 5 minutes till 5 is what you're saying.
Well, and Jason is flashing us a good note, which is a good reminder too, as always. Right. And especially when I started off just throwing back 15% rosé, that you know, you've got to make a plan when you're out drinking, and whether you've got a driving service bringing you to the wineries,
yes,
or like what I was talking about earlier, you know, when my wife is tasting, I'm driving, when I'm tasting, my wife is driving, or for tonight, on every night when we do the show, I've got a driving service called We're Driving, and they come and get me and drive me home. So It's always important for you to be responsible, and
absolutely,
we've had a lot of fun here tonight, and I definitely need a driving service. You know,
You were pretty thirsty at the beginning.
I know, I was thirsty. I was hot and I was thirsty, and then another two glasses of wine on top of it. So I've had my share, definitely. And so what's nice is that I don't have to worry about how I'm getting home. Somebody's going to drive me home.
Yeah, we've seen a pretty good cross-section of wine tasters. And
come with a designated driver.
A lot of people have a designated driver. Sometimes it's their 17 or 18-year-old kid who has a really sour look on their face, yeah. But at least they get to practice driving.
Right.
We dragged my, I think she was 16 or 15 at the time. We dragged my sister all the way through Napa, and she was, the look on her face, she was just bored. Everybody's having a good time.
Hating life.
But she was designated driver, so it was great. It works out.
So yes. So when she was driving, she was the happiest kid in the world. But,
oh, yeah.
But when she was waiting for you.
She was just waiting, and we were doing tours of the barrel rooms and stuff, and she's like, this is all boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's no fun if you come to the party late, and that's kind of just a perpetual late feeling, you know. So.
Well, Janice Marlowe, thank you so much for coming in with us this evening.
And
sharing wine, and anyone who's out there listening, make sure that when you go in, say, hey, you heard it here on Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Yeah.
And let us and let them know that you know, we kind of introduced you to it.
Yeah.
And if you've been there before, then fantastic.
Go back.
Yeah, because I'll be back too.
Yeah, and we gave your website. Is there anything else you guys want us to tell about or talk about?
Not particularly. The you know, sharing wine is what wine is all about. You know, it's not a me beverage. It's a community beverage. It's an agricultural product that was meant to be shared around the table and the fireplace or wherever you happen to be gathered. And we're glad to be able to do it with you guys.
We want you all to come in and toast the train when it goes by. Yeah. That's what we do.
Nice.
Good excuse.
Right. And that's the other thing. I mean, when you're looking out the back of the patio, you know, you've got the tracks, which is used, you know, whenever the train goes by. But then it's almost a straight shot to the beach, isn't it?
The beach, yeah.
You
the,
can see
the farm,
Harbortown.
Harbortown, the farmlands, yeah.
The sunset, you know, it's a nice place to kind of sit and relax, definitely.
All right, well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. And
Jason,
so
thanks for coming in.
Jason, and especially a special thanks, you know, monitoring the feed to make sure that everything was good, because Things were spotty there for a little bit. So I'm glad that you were there to help us out. The other thing is, next week we're off, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess I'll plug my event real quick.
Go ahead.
We have a crochet and beer tasting going on next Thursday. Yes.
No.
Have you ever wanted to crochet and learn about beer at the same time?
Learn to crochet and drink
yourself.
Beer.
You can hurt yourself, but it's only four little samplers, so you'll be okay.
Right, and it's a hook. I mean, knitting, yeah. Knitting, I can see hurting yourself.
Yeah, it's a hook,
but
you're right.
It's
you obviously know more about crochet than I do.
It's a hook.
It is called Hooks and Hops, so very good. You got it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So if you'd like to join us, let me know.
So I'll give a plug out to my mom then, who is a craft writer. So I do know the difference between crocheting and knitting, and I can identify the two.
Excellent.
Because I grew up with it, but so, that's just me.
It's a first of.
What's that? Are you doing a remote from there, Curtis?
No, we're skipping the remote. So next week that we're not, but then we're back.
We got a bunch of good special events. Yeah,
a bunch of them coming back to Vera House.
There's a crafty showdown. Do you know about tatting?
Tatting?
She didn't tat? Oh my god!
No.
Now that sounds like a slang for tattooing.
Yeah,
but.
That's right.
Yeah, needles and ink. That's what that sounds like to me.
Needles and ink.
How they make lace.
Oh, no, my mom never did lace.
Stuffed you.
Right, I'll have to remember that. I'll ask her about that. So so
we still have some tickets left. If you check out our website or check out Facebook, Barrel House 101.
Definitely, because
it'll be fun.
And the other thing, too.
I love it.
So the last time we were on, we had Lumina.
Yes.
And who was our first female guest? We have Janice tonight's second female guest. And really, that's one of the things that we want to make sure that, even though we're two guys talking about all this stuff, we are equal opportunity. I don't know. We love everything, and we want to be inclusive of everyone. And then this just kind of shoots out to it, the crochet and crafts and craft beer at Barrel House. I mean, this is going to be.
There might be some guys.
There could.
I'm not saying there won't.
There certainly could be, but it's just a way to introduce craft beer to women.
That's
as well.
Exactly what it is. So. It's introduction to crochet. So I think they're going to make a bracelet. And it's Anne from Anacapa Yarns, and then Allison from Ventura Food Tours, and myself. And so they get four beers of tasting. They learn a little bit about beer. It's a quick, like, 101. And then they learn how to make a bracelet. So
fabulous.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right. So next week, kind of watch for the or not next week, but the week after, we'll kind of watch our Facebook Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, and we'll let you know what's coming up.
Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank Cheers. You, Marlo. Thank you, Janice.
Hey, thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. If you like this podcast, make sure you like us on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook under Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Give us a like and share it with all your friends. We'd appreciate it. Cheers.